I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. What's it like to have two hands? May seem like an odd question, but not for Jordan Reeves. The 12-year-old was born with her left arm ending just above the elbow, and she's on a mission for limb difference acceptance. It's led her to start a petition, develop products, and deliver a TEDx talk, all to normalize limb differences in our culture. We'll talk with Jordan and her mom to learn where this journey has taken them. Then, a topic that continues to fascinate me, the sport of noodling. Two men who search river bottoms to catch monster catfish with their bare hands will do their best to convince me why anybody would do that. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Jordan Reeves calls it a limb difference. The 11-year-old from over in Colombia, Jordan was born with one complete arm and one arm that stopped just before her elbow. She may be young, but Jordan has become an advocate for people with limb differences. She started a petition that has garnered over 25,000 signatures to include limb difference American Girl dolls. And now she's pitched a glitter shooting prosthetic arm, as well as a device that allows people with one hand to use two-handed paper towel machines. She pitched this to Shark Tank judges, which happened on the Rachel Ray Show. She's given a TEDx talk, and she and her mother founded a nonprofit called Born Just Right to help with Jordan's mission of limb difference acceptance. Jordan Reeves is right here with me now, and so nice to have you. Welcome.
Hi.
And your mom is here too, Mother Jen Reeves.
Hello.
Jen, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thanks.
Too. Well, I just met you, and I'm already so impressed. You can't be 11 years old.
Well, I am.
And that's just the way it is, right? Yeah.
Yep.
You use this phrase, limb difference, to describe your situation, Jordan. I had never heard that before. Did you come up with that yourself?
Well, there's a community of people, and we pretty much all use limb difference.
Yeah.
It's a congenital. Often when it's a limb difference, it's due to a congenital difference. And if it's a traumatic injury, a lot of people say limb loss.
Yeah. You know, Jordan, you've done so many things that impress me. Here's just one of them. It has to do with how you deal with people who stare at you. How do you deal with that? What do you do?
I ask them if they have any questions for me.
Ah. And if they do, what might they ask typically?
What happened to your arm?
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel about it when people stare at you?
I feel a little bit annoyed, but I know that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, for some people, it can be tricky, right?
Yeah.
And you understand that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mom, weigh in here.
Well, we have a saying that when we have a child who has a hard time accepting the fact that Jordan is a little different, we discuss that parent probably just never introduced the idea that people can be different.
Mm-hmm.
And a limb difference is just one way of many where we're all different, and there's a lot of different physical differences.
Isn't
out there.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
Yeah. You've even designed a T-shirt to help you deal with this. Describe it to us, Jordan.
Well, I have several. One says, "Don't stare, just ask." So some people stare at me and then they'll see my shirt.
And will they come over and say, "Okay, I'm going to ask"?
Sometimes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it works?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think everybody should wear those T-shirts, even folks who don't have limb difference?
Maybe if they want to, like, share their story, that would be cool.
That would be something to do, yeah. What other T-shirts have you designed?
I have a shirt that says Celebrate the Unicorns, which means that you should celebrate the differences in life.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
How do your classmates feel about all this? All the attention you're getting and then the fact that maybe you are just a little bit different?
They usually just forget about all this craziness and the fact that I'm different.
They don't even notice, right?
In a way, yeah.
I was watching some video of you in your classroom. It's just like people just doing whatever they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the way it should be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does anything happen at the beginning of the year, Mom, to deal with this?
In the years past, as she grew up through elementary school, we created a little book that we would introduce the kids to see how she gets about and does all kinds of activities, just so if some kids have a hard time asking the questions, we had pictures to show it.
Mm-hmm.
But we are totally done with that because we start with middle school this year. So we're hoping that her crew of friends will just be there to give her a little backup if there's someone who's a little confused or unsure.
Hey, Jen, I'm wondering what you find remarkable about your daughter.
She is able. Oh, she's getting embarrassed. She's able to speak and explain her pride of her differences. She's very confident in how she mentors younger children.
I'm really struck
and
by that already.
She also, she had a chance to teach adults periodically how to tie shoes one-handed. The way she carries herself, I'm just so proud that she's growing into the person that she is.
How do you tie shoes?
Well, it's a mix of using my limb difference and my hand. So I'll start by crossing over the laces and putting a string through and then making two bunny ears and crossing them over and putting one bunny ear through.
How hard was that for you to learn?
A little hard.
Yeah. But when you got it, how did that feel?
I felt really happy because I finally got it.
Because sometimes you teach younger kids who have limb difference, you teach them how to tie, right?
Yep.
And when they get it, that's kind of a great moment.
Yeah. And when they are like, oh, I can't do it, and then they finally get it, they're like so happy and it's really cool.
That's a big moment because it gives what means kids can have a little more freedom and everything else, right? Yeah. You know, Jordan, when you go into a classroom and it's of younger kids, what do you tell them? What do you say?
I usually say I was born this way and I let them ask me questions.
Mm-hmm. And what happens during the course of the time that you're there, do you think? What impact do you think you have on the kids?
Well, I think I let them know that differences are a big thing and that they're different, too. We're all different.
Mm-hmm. And do they seem interested in what you have to say?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of times, yeah.
I was going to say, I bet they do. And you play, I saw just on your looking around about you, you play basketball. And you play baseball, and is there anything you can't do?
Monkey bars.
Oh, monkey bars. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah.
So we're working on it, though.
Are you?
Yep.
Well, she does CrossFit because she really wants to build strength, her upper limb strength. So that if she can invent and work with her prosthetist for some type of arm that helps with that, she has to have a lot stronger upper limb strength for that.
I see.
So CrossFit.
Yeah. What is what's the hardest thing about playing basketball or playing baseball? Is there anything particularly difficult for you?
Basketball would probably be having the ball and trying to get it to the basket.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people guarding you.
Have you scored?
Yes.
Well, good for you. I bet people went nuts when that happened.
She's a mean defender. That little arm, it's rough.
Really? Really?
And baseball would probably be hitting the ball. I usually don't have much self... I really don't think I'm amazing at hitting the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I just can't hit it.
And hit it, make it go very far, I bet, just with one hand, right?
Well, I mean, I can make it go far if I believe in myself.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How far have you hit it?
Probably near the grass.
Oh, out to the outfield almost then, eh? Well, good for you. Good for you.
And she's super fast. So when kids are not expecting anything, she's already at first base. It's kind of cool.
Well, you know, Jen, when did you guys decide to sort of launch this crusade?
Oh, well, I launched the crusade the moment I found out the day she was born and she had one hand. I had no idea. And
tell us about that moment because you've talked about it before.
So when she was born, I noticed it in the room first and I asked, is she okay? And they said, yeah, she's okay. So I looked up at my husband and he looked back down and he agreed she's okay. And I swear we clicked the eye connection, the two of us, we just knew she's going to be okay. And I made sure in my mind that I would make a point of giving her any opportunity I could. I'm a former journalist, and so at the time I was still a newsroom person, and I attacked all the fields of knowledge and started a blog so that I could report out everything I was learning about how to help her grow up and be strong. And what I didn't expect was that I would, not only would she be strong, but she's turning into quite the advocate of her own.
Oh, that's just amazing. If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're visiting with Jordan and Jen Reeves, Jordan born with a limb difference, and we're interested in taking your phone calls here. 816-235-2888 is the phone number, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. JR from Midtown. JR, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you for having this topic on this morning.
You bet. Go ahead.
Basically, I have a son who's in his lower 30s, and he has a limb difference. He has a congenital amputation of the foot right in front of the ankle. So he had an ankle when he was born, and that's about it. But he made adaptions, and he was in a prosthesis from time that he started crawling, trying to pull up, and he's worn one his whole life, although he's actually worn about 24 of them with growth and everything. You know, he's a happy, wonderful guy, and basically says that, you know, if anybody gives him a problem, he has a portable butt kicker. He pulls his leg off and uses it for him.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. The one thing that we did as parents, you know, once we got over the shock and everything, you know, we decided to accept and love him no matter what his difference, because he was always going to be our son, is that, you know, when we got in situations at school or scouts or other activities where the other kids and parents, well, he can't play that game or he can't do that. Okay, fine. Let's play the game anyway, but let's make a change of the rules to accommodate the
play. Right. Yeah, I need to scoot on here, JR. How have you guys handled situations like that?
I've always asked if there is someone who is saying can't, I say step back and watch and give her a chance to learn. And Jordan's figured out things that when she was first born in my head, I was like, oh, she will never be able to do this, do that, do this. But I never said that to her, nor have I ever shown it to her. And it's she's shocked, but it's true. I had doubts, and she's proved me time and time again. By saying can't, that's setting limitations that she's proven don't exist.
Yeah, that's interesting. Let's go to Frank from Lawrence. Frank, you're on Up to Date.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, it sounds like a terrific little girl you've got there.
Thanks.
My question, Jordan, is do you have any brothers or sisters, and how do they react to you? And secondly, what about household pets and any animals you have interacted with? And I'll take your answer off the air. Thanks.
How about other brothers or sisters, Jordan?
I have a brother, and he's pretty awesome.
His name's Cameron, right?
Yep.
Is he older or younger?
He is older.
Yeah. And what about our caller's question about the pets?
I have two dogs, actually.
Yeah.
And they're really awesome.
Yeah. You know, Jordan has received so much attention, Jen. It obviously has you guys traveling a lot. Does that overshadow the family dynamic in any way, or are you able to keep things fairly normal at home when you're there?
You know, we may travel and do a lot of advocacy, but when we're home, it's home. Mm-hmm. And we are as centered as we possibly can. Her brother, Cameron, is super duper proud. And I make a point of spending time with him, watching him play his video games and talking. And he's so proud of her. And we as a family have committed to Born Just Right as an organization and supporting Jordan as long as she wants to continue to advocate for herself and for her community.
Yeah. And did I read that you guys are working on Jordan's autobiography?
We are.
No kidding.
We have a literary agent, and I'm in talks with a publisher or two.
Yay.
We do.
Are you actually beginning to work on it, Jordan?
Yep.
Actually, we've written a lot of it already.
Really? And you don't normally hear of 12-year-olds writing autobiographies, because usually it's something you do when you're older.
Well, my mom's been helping me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you were saying that it's not a book about you. It's about what?
Our journey.
It's our journey. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty cool.
And maybe at some point you're going to have to write another volume of it, because as you get older, there'll be a whole lot more to say.
Probably. I hope.
You hope? Yeah. I'm also wondering about this Shark Tank judges thing you guys did, and what was that all about? Tell us about the prosthetic glitter shooter gun thing that you've done. You have one sitting here right here in the studio with us.
Yep. So pretty much it's a prosthetic arm that shoots glitter.
It's the shape of a unicorn horn.
And it shoots out of a unicorn horn.
Now, why did you want to do this?
Because usually kids don't find design as an interesting thing. I mean, some kids do, but I mean, they usually find it as something boring. But I'm showing that design can be fun and interesting.
Mm-hmm. And how do kids react to it when you take it to school and fire it?
They're usually like, oh, wow, that's really cool.
Yeah. Hey, Jen, how does it work?
So it is a 3D printed prosthetic arm that's a shape of a unicorn horn.
It's a 3D print. Of course it is.
Yes.
I don't know. I've talked about these things. That's amazing
yeah.
to me.
There's a tube that can be attached to that with these cans, the duster cans that you would use for cleaning
right.
your keyboard.
Right.
You attach that to the little tube, and there's a ton of glitter in this arm in a big tank, and the glitter and the air meet, and it shoots outside that glitter. It just goes in a big stream, and it's messy, and something that I personally would have never been cool with if I hadn't. I stepped back, and she was a part of a design camp. If I had been in the room, I would have said, heck no.
Yeah.
So,
a lot of glitter in the living room, probably.
No,
yeah.
Well, we do have a rule, glitter outside.
Yeah. Oh,
until she shoots the dog, and then the dog comes in with glitter. So
yeah. yeah. But you've been happy with it, Jordan?
Yeah, it's really cool to see what had started from something not so amazing into something, like, really cool that's pretty accurate.
Yeah. She got tied up with a designer, and they meet regularly. For a while, it was once a week through Google Hangouts. And so he and his name's Sam Hobish and Jordan work together to keep working on new designs. They're still working on it.
Now, do other kids who have limb differences, do they have these things too? Have you been able to share this around?
No.
Not yet.
Not yet. We're working on it.
You want to, though.
Yeah. We're trying to make it better.
Can you just like imagine like a big, like being in a big gym or something and having all these kids and with these guns and having a big old glitter fight and stuff?
That would be awesome.
Sounds so messy.
But you can sort of imagine it happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What did the Shark Tank judges say about this thing? I saw pictures of you with Mark Cuban, who owns the Dallas Mavericks NBA team.
Yeah. They thought it was really cool. And I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
The fact that these really famous people thought something that I had made was cool was really cool.
that's not a bad feeling. But do you have plans, Jen, to take this and make them?
Well, we're working on the patent process. And there is she and her designer, Sam, have been trying to think of new ways to turn this into a two-handed tool at the same time, so it can be used for one-handedness or two-handedness.
That's cool.
There are some ideas that we have. We're hoping that our nonprofit could call this our first patent. We're creating more events. We just had an event in Boston this past Sunday where gave other kids a chance to learn about design and taking advantage of their bodies and using what some people might consider a deficiency, a design opportunity.
Oh, that's interesting.
We had one child created an arm that had a pool noodle on it. So, you know, you could have
funny.
A nice little pool battle. So, yeah, we have plans, and I think that this is just the beginning. Some awesome ideas.
Well, you've really dived into this thing.
Yeah.
You see a big road ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I feel like design is a wonderful gift to people in the disability community, because I know this by watching Jordan as an advocate. If you live in the disability community, you are already a problem solver, and you see design flaws in ways that a typical body cannot see.
Right.
And so I'm hoping that we can bring more design learning to kids in the disability world so that they can have a voice and speak up about design ideas that no one's thought of before.
So Jordan, were you actually on TV in the whole Shark Tank thing?
Yeah, I was.
Yeah. How did you like being on TV?
I thought it was really cool. I was really nervous, though.
What's more fun, radio or TV?
Probably TV.
Because there's more, like, lights and cameras and stuff?
And, yeah.
Yeah. You know, you've also designed something I was going to ask you about. It's a push-up arm.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what that's about?
So it's pretty much a prosthetic arm that would go on my arm. And when I would push down, the elbow would bend.
Oh.
And then when I push up, it would, like, bend back.
So you could do push-ups.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier, your mom did, Jordan, that developing strength up here, that's something of a challenge?
A little bit, because you need a lot of strength there to do a lot of those things. You need a lot of it.
I also wanted to ask you about your American Girl doll petition. Now, what were you thinking there?
A lot of kids go to American Girl to get a doll, and
of course,
you know the line of different dolls that they've been making.
I wasn't familiar with that, but
well,
there's a line. It's called Truly Me.
Yeah.
I'm kind of old now, Jordan. I don't mess around with dolls that much anymore. Just once in a while.
So, kids would. My idea is that kids would go to American Girl, and they would see dolls with a limb difference, and so then they would like. More kids would know what a limb difference is.
I think that's a great idea.
Since it's such a big corporation.
Now, how do the American Girl doll people feel about that idea?
They said maybe.
Maybe. Okay.
Maybe, yeah.
But you guys did a petition, though,
right? We did a petition. The company has created some different, what I consider, upgrades for dolls with wheelchairs and insulin pumps and things like that. But we would love for kids to have an opportunity, if they have a doll line that's really supposed to be about truly me, to mm-hmm. Look like a child, kids with limb differences should have that option as well.
Yeah.
And kids who are fully limbed should have the option to see it and mm-hmm. make that more of a mainstream doll. It's possible.
You know, one of the things we talk about on this show occasionally is this idea, Jen, that, you know, your timing might be so perfect here, because it just seems like in so many ways, younger people are so much more open to differences these days, and certainly my generation was, and maybe yours too. Am I sensing that correctly? Are you feeling that as well?
I feel that there's a lot more ways to celebrate differences and raise more awareness. I think there's also more opportunities for the creativity that comes from those differences to be used and take advantage of. I think that industry and hiring managers of the future will see this as an opportunity instead of a deficiency.
Yeah,
it's definitely a great time to be a kid, and it's a great time to be a kid who understands how to learn about failure and challenges and how to use it to your advantage.
As we wrap up here, Jen, you started a nonprofit called Born Just Right, which you've mentioned here today. What are the goals of the organization, and how can people get involved with it?
Yeah, so Born Just Right at bornjustright.org. We are working with kids across the country to create opportunities for them to learn about design. The first community we've worked with is Limb Difference, because it's our community. Mm-hmm. But I want to work with other kids in the disability world to learn about ways to enhance their wheelchair, their body, upgrades that they can come up with themselves. It can be fun, like a unicorn horn glitter shooter. It could be a solution. What I've seen is right now there is an evolution of design support for the disability community, where designers and engineers are pitching in, but they're usually a typically bodied person. I want to help empower children to take advantage of it and learn own their own design opportunity. So we are creating events. We're looking for designers who want to volunteer their services. We're also looking for sponsorship, and it's expensive to do this.
And it's bornjustright.com?
Bornjustright.org.
.org.
Yep.
Okay.
And it's because Jordan was born just with a right hand, and she's just right.
Oh, there you go. Well, you're becoming kind of a superstar in this world, aren't you?
I mean,
do you like that?
I mean, it's cool to see what's happening. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, you guys are so good to come in and visit with us. I really appreciate you taking some time and coming over from Columbia today,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we're doing an event tonight with Hanger Prosthetics at the Royals game, and we're doing an event at Hallmark tomorrow to meet a one-handed keepsake artist whose name is Tammy Haddix, and we're going to introduce her to a bunch of the kids with limb differences here in town.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. That sounds great. That's Jordan Reeves. Jordan, I wish you all the best in the world.
Thanks for coming to see us.
You bet. Jen, nice to have you,
yeah,
too.
Thanks.
Good luck. Okay. Time for a break. We're going to switch topics dramatically here. We're going to talk about noodling, which means catching giant catfish with your bare arms down in the Ozarks, and why anyone in their right minds would ever want to do something like that. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday, we found out how future home technology will help you stay healthy, and we discussed a film on internet addiction that's screening today as part of Fringe Fest KC. You can hear those conversations at kcur.org/uptodate. On Monday, the Inns announced a political opposition research, and we speak with the head of the Kansas City Streetcar Authority about expansion plans. That's Monday on KCUR's Up to Date. Noodling, bulldogging, hogging, grabbing, fist fishing, call it whatever you want, you're still sticking your arm down the gullet of a giant, slimy catfish. So what's up with that? Now we'll look at the culture of hand fishing, and we'll find out why, for some people, it's more than just a hobby. With us to discuss the art of noodling, Ramey Webb of Ludlow, Missouri, is a champion noodler. His father was on this program back in 2009 talking about this. And Ramey, it's nice to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Howard Ramsey is also with us on the phone. He's from Paris, Missouri, and he's president of Noodlers Anonymous, a noodling advocate group in Missouri. And Howard, nice to have you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Ramey, I can't wrap my arms around this. Why do you do it?
Well,
I can't imagine, you know, going down a creek and finding a hole underwater, which you can't see, and sticking your arm down there.
A blind man could actually do this sport.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, like you said, an art to knowing whether there's a beaver in there, a fish.
Or a cottonmouth.
Well, if you see more than one or two, you kind of want to avoid that area. You know,
more than one or two snakes.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I would probably do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
How often have you stuck your arm down the wrong hole?
Never.
Really?
No, and that's what the art of knowing if it's a fish hole or beaver hole. Beaver has to have air, so the hole goes up. A fish hole always goes downward.
Down. Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right. Howard, help me here. So you're willing to stick your arm into an underwater catfish burrow in the hopes that a giant catfish will clamp down on it, and you can pull the thing out of the water. Why do you do it?
Well, I guess it's a tradition in my family. My granddad did it. My father taught me when I was 12 years old, and it wasn't necessarily a big catfish. It only weighed about 3 pounds, but it chewed the heck out of my hand.
If I told you it sounds absolutely terrifying, you'd say what, Howard?
I'd say you're right. It is. It's also an adrenaline rush. I can remember every fish I ever caught, but there's some dates that are important in my life that I can't remember.
Now, Howard, I've heard it said that those giant catfish don't quite taste as good when you fry them up as the smaller ones do. Is that right?
No, that's wrong. That's another myth about hand fishing. The big fish are just as good as the little fish if you know how to clean them.
Do you agree with that?
That's right. You got to cut the tail off, bleed that fish out, and you got to cut all the red meat out. And that, I just soon eat that as anything.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Now, there's this notion that you guys sometimes, you'll go to a riverbank, and you'll go underwater and underneath the bank a little ways in search of a catfish or whatever. And, you know, that begins to put yourself in at least a little bit of danger. Help me there.
And it's the deal. The thing of it is, the guys that you got to go with, you're trusting your life that they've got your back. I mean,
or holding your ankles, right?
Well, that's true. They've got to hold your ankles, but in order, like me, I can have hold of somebody's feet, and I can tell what's going on just by holding onto their feet. That's what we're trying to, I'm trying to explain, is it's the art of knowing, all right, if that guy's in trouble, he's, you know, because I've seen it before, a guy will go in there and get snagged on a root or something, and you can't pull him out because you're jabbing him with them stobs or whatever. But it's really, it's an art, and knowing what's going on by holding on to somebody's feet is really a unique deal, you know, I mean, but...
Well, I know I'm repeating myself here, but that sounds crazy to me.
Well, and it is. I mean, it is.
As a matter of fact.
But that's a lot of what we're saying is you got to trust the guys you go with. You know, you're trusting your life. You know, it's dangerous.
And the rush of it, Ramey, is what?
Well, I've never done drugs, but that is my high. That is my ultimate high is, you know,
and what's,
the rush.
What's the rush of it? When it clamps down?
Well, it's the satisfaction. I mean, it's kind of like you're deer hunting or turkey hunting. You know, you shoot one or you kind of get, you know, your adrenaline and all that. And that's kind of what we're saying is our high, you know. I mean,
how do you know when your arm is going into the mouth of a cat? What is it? How do you know when you've hit pay dirt? You just poking around down there?
Oh, no, no, no. You kind of go in there with your hands together and your thumbs down. And, yeah, they say it's like taking eggs out from under a sitting hen. Well, that fish is going to bite you, and you're going to know it. You know, I mean, that's the way it is. You're going to get bit.
You go in with both arms?
Both hands, just your thumbs down, your hands together, your thumbs down. And when you go in there, that fish is going to bite you.
What's that feel like?
Well, it's... It can be bad sometimes.
Do they have teeth?
Oh, yes. It's my explanation of getting bit is, if anybody knows what a horseshoe rasp is, you just stick your hand down and just run that horseshoe rasp over your hand, and you'll know what I'm talking about.
Now, Howard, I understand why your group is called Noodlers Anonymous, because who in the world would want to acknowledge they do something like this?
Yeah, that's right. Especially in Missouri, because as you probably know, it is against the law. That's why we have to go to Oklahoma or Illinois or one of the other 19 states that is legal around Missouri.
It's illegal here, Howard. Why?
Well, the Department of Conservation can't really tell you why. They claim it's because you're taking the fish off the nest. But if that were true, it would be illegal to catch bass and crappie and bluegill. It would be illegal to snag for spoonbill. The only difference is the only way you can catch a catfish on the nest is with your hands. So they don't have a good reason.
Do they worry that you'll somehow take out too many mother catfish and do something to the population of catfish in the state?
Well, that's what they claim, but... right now, there's over 500,000 cat fishermen in Missouri. That's not fishermen. That's cat fishermen. And roughly 1,000 to 2,000 hand fishermen. Those 500,000 cat fishermen get to use 33 hooks on jugs, bank poles, a number of different ways to catch fish. And they're allowed, it's either 15 or 20 catfish a day now. I think they changed the rule to 15. But they can catch 15 a day, 365 days a year. And as all we're asking for is a legal regulated season that will allow us to catch five fish in a 61-day season.
Yeah.
And compared to the 500,000 cat fishermen, that's a very minute amount. So, we're not hurting the catfish population. That's actually been proven in several studies, but not in Missouri.
Now, I gather you guys have done petitions, Howard. How far that hasn't gotten you where you wanted to get, right?
No, it hasn't. It has passed the it's never failed to pass on the committee, House or the Senate, but it has passed on the House floor with with 153 yeses and 5 noes. It's passed on the Senate floor twice, 27 yes and 5 noes. So the people in Missouri are telling their congressmen and their senators, representatives, that they want a hand fishing season. They want the MDC to give us one.
I gather some Missourians still go hand fishing in Missouri, even though it's against the law, Howard. Would I be guessing correctly?
Oh, that's a pretty big guess. I don't know. I don't want to go there.
All right. Do people get arrested in Missouri for hand fishing each year?
Yes, they do.
What's the penalty? Yes.
Well, can range anywhere up to $1,000 and 30 days in jail.
You know, I'm told, Ramey, that some of these catfish are so big and so strong that they can actually pull a hand fisherman under the water and mess with them a little bit that way. Is that right? You're a big man. No catfish is going to pull you under the water, is it?
Well, that's where the guys you go with are there to help you. Because, yes, a 30-pound fish could break your arm in a matter of seconds. You know, and that's... That's why you got your other guys that you trust to have your back.
How's a catfish going to break your arm?
Well, if you've seen any alligator shows, how they grab onto their prey and twist and roll over, that's exactly what a catfish will do. They will bite you, and if you don't have a good grip on them, they could spin around, roll over, and they will break your arm.
Has your arm ever been broken?
No, sir.
But you've known people who...
Well, you got that bottom jaw. That's how we do it. But more than likely, it's going to spin right off your hands. But when it does, it really tears your hands up.
Ramey, who taught you how to noodle? Your dad?
My dad.
Yeah, who's been with us in the past. Tell us about that experience for you learning in the first time you did it.
Well, whenever I first started going, I've been going since I was probably 5 years old. And I caught a couple 5-6 pounders under some rocks or something like that. But the first fish that I actually tried, I was probably 13. And that fish whooped me. And I said, there's nobody in this river big enough to shove me back in that hole.
What do you mean? What did the fish do to you?
Oh, tear your hands up.
He whipped you up.
He whipped me.
Yeah. And he got away.
He got away. And that's the other part is we do not catch every fish we find.
Mm-hmm. Some of them can...
A lot of them get away. Over 50% of them probably get away from us.
Yeah. What time of day do you go?
Oh, anytime. We used to be working in the fields, walking soybeans, cultivating beans, and then, of course, it'd be hot, and we'd just crawl in, you know.
To a creek.
And cool off and enjoy it, and that's where our family tradition comes about, is we all enjoyed it, you know, and we'd go as a family, you know. Neighbors would come by, and, hey, let's go cool off. Well, that was our way of cooling off. We didn't go to the city pools or... anything like that. We went to the creeks and jumped in and cooled off. We had a bridge we always went to, and that's where we swam.
Howard, this just strikes me as such a Missouri thing. Am I seeing that correctly?
For hundreds of years. It actually dates back to the Native Americans, and that's been written about in several books. Yes, it's a Missouri tradition.
Who taught you, Howard?
My dad taught me when I was 12. I was a little older than Ramey, but I can still see my dad. He already had a rock picked out for me, and he wanted me to go up on the bank and check that rock. And the water wasn't but about ankle deep, and I stuck my hand back under there, and that fish grabbed hold of me. And I screamed and run clear out of the bank, probably cried a little bit. My hand was bleeding. And I can, to this day, still see my dad laughing out in the middle of the river, and he asked me if he was in there.
So how much time passed before you went and tried it again?
I got right back in the water. I couldn't wait. to get back in the water and catch another fish. It's the only true animal that you can put your hands on. I mean, it's not like killing deer, like killing turkey. You can actually put your hand on this live animal and catch him and still not hurt him.
Yeah.
And then you've got the choice of keeping him or releasing him.
Let me get our listeners involved here. Again, if you're just joining us, we're talking about hand fishing or noodling, bulldogging, hogging, whatever you want to call it. 816-235-2888 is our number. If you've tried it, I want to know what your first experience was like. 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. The history of this thing, Ramey, as Howard was saying, goes way, way back, it sounds like.
Correct.
Your generations, your family did it long before...
Actually, my dad learned from some old timers up home, and that's where, you know, they worked in the fields. Back then, farmers worked harder than we do now. I mean, mm-hmm. far as you're bucking bales and feeding cattle and walking soybeans every day, and my granddad, you know, and them shuck corn by hand. Well, of course, when you're out there, you get hot, but... My dad learned actually from some old timers. I think my granddad, he actually went a few times, but like I say, my dad learned from some other old timers that taught him, and then my dad taught it to us, and I've actually taught it to my girls. They've actually, one of my daughters caught a fish.
They like to do it. Do they do it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. What's the biggest fish you've ever taken out of a creek or a river?
The biggest fish we ever caught was 97 pounds.
97 pounds?
Yep.
Tell us about catching that thing.
Well, it was, like I said, a rush. I mean, but it took more than just one guy, and that's what it's all about, is you got to have that guy you trust, you know, that goes with you. So.
Did you know right away that you had
We had an extraordinary fish, yes, sir.
How could you tell?
Just by touching it, I knew. I mean,
when you got it up to the surface, were you even surprised when you knew what you had?
The fish, yes, we knew that it was a extraordinary fish.
97 pounds.
Yep.
Did it toss you around?
Yes, we had a tussle with it. And that's what I say. If there wouldn't have been actually three of us there, that fish would have got away.
Whose hand was in it?
Actually, my brother-in-law's was.
And then you were there to help him.
Yeah, you got to grab a tail, and that fish rolled around, and all three of us was like whales flopping around out there.
You got to grab a tail. I always thought catfish had sharp fins. You don't want to grab a tail, do you?
Well, some places you run your hand inside the gills, you will get some sharp, like the gills or some places, but yes, there is fins that are broke off, that'll stab you in the legs or in the arms, something like that. It's
Howard, what's the biggest fish you've taken out of a river?
64 pounds was the biggest, a flathead. I went back in the bank about 8 foot and head first, and my son followed me in and held onto my ankles. The first time I kicked, he pulled me out. But I guess I kicked a little too soon because I didn't have both hands in the fish's mouth, so I had to go back after him the second time. And the main part about when you're trying to catch a fish like that is you've got to have control of that tail. If you don't, like Ramey said, if you don't have control of that tail, that fish will hurt you bad.
How do you get control of the tail when you're going in with both arms into the mouth, Howard?
Well, it's a technique when you come back out, when your son or whoever pulls you back out, you've got to invert yourself immediately and put both legs around that fish's tail, and then your son or your helper keeps your head above water while the fish is roped or strung, however you want to do it.
But the problem is the creek is muddy, and you can't see anything while you're doing it. You don't know what you're wrapping your legs around, Howard.
Well, by the time you get both hands in his mouth, you know whether it's a beaver or not. that's why we helped make the regulations in the 2-year trial season that we had. And you can't wear gloves in Missouri because you might pin a beaver to the bottom and he will turn around and bite you because you can't tell whether it's got hair on it or not.
Yeah, okay. What are the prospects for getting this legalized in Missouri, Howard, going forward?
Since I lost my partner, Gary Webb, it's just about come to an end. The Conservation Department claims that Missouri fish are different than the other 19 states that are legal. So we've just about lost hope. One day there'll be some young guy, 25 or 30 years old, that'll want to continue the fight. But
you know, Ramey, right now, there are thousands of listeners right now listening to this segment, lots of city people thinking there still isn't a way in the world they would do something like this. And you would say what to them?
Well, a lot of people say you're nuts. I would not even try that. Well, I don't blame them. I don't.
Not at all, right?
Not at all. Not at all.
Yeah, okay. We're going to have to leave it right there. That's Ramey Webb of Ludlow, Missouri, a champion noodler. Howard Ramsey, Paris, Missouri. He's president of Noodlers Anonymous. Gentlemen, thanks very much, and stay safe out there, okay?
All right. Thanks for
having us. Thank you for having us.
You bet.
We've enjoyed it.
Good deal. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR up to date, and you can follow me at Steve Kraske. On Monday's show, a look at what exactly opposition research is, and we speak with the head of the Kansas City Streetcar Authority. Bobby Watson composed our theme music. We had help this week from Linda Scher, Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, and Marlia Campbell. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.